This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Ladies and gentlemen, today marks the 54th anniversary of UC San Diego's founding. To start our program, we'd like to recognize those faculty who were here in the beginning. Please direct your attention to the center aisle or the screen as our UC San Diego founding faculty make their way to their seats. Today, we celebrate UC San Diego's founders and our entire campus community, from our first student and faculty member to the class of 2018 and everyone in between. We recognize on this Founders Day the people who've shaped UC San Diego's history and who are now shaping our future.
Good morning. My name is Suresh Subramani. I'm the Executive Vice Chancellor at UC San Diego. On behalf of the entire campus, I'd love to welcome all of you. It's a wonderful occasion. As you know, this is our 54th anniversary of our founding in November of 1960. Of course, it's wonderful to have many of our founding faculty here. There are over 20 of them here that we just recognized. And it is a special event as we celebrate the Founders Day event every year to recognize what has been accomplished in 54 years. And this would not have been possible without our founding faculty, without the faculty, staff, and students, the alumni, and the many supporters of the university who are here in the audience today. So thank you again on behalf of the entire university. As we processed up to the front, you saw Jerry Boss, who's the chair of the Academic Senate, carrying the mace that represents the mace for the university. This is a unique item that is located somewhere here. It represents the university in the sense that it is constructed and it was actually commissioned in 1989 by Chancellor Atkinson at that time. And we had a special person, Andrea, who actually made the mace for the campus. And it shows in the mace itself, it represents the sea in taking shells from our local ocean, and it's in the mace itself. It shows the colors of the university, blue and gold, and it also has the university maxim, "Let there be light." So if you have a chance after the event, you might want to take a look at this. This university and the land that we exist on at this point in time was occupied by the local Native American Indians who used to live here. And these are the Kumeyaay Indians. And without their legacy, we would not be here. So I want to recognize this in a special way. We're going to have Carmen Linares, who represents the Yuto Nahua Mexica people. And she's going to give a special invocation and a blessing on behalf of the Native Americans. So, Carmen, I'd like to invite you up to the podium, please.
I am a muralist and a member of the Chicano Park Steering Committee for over 21 years, providing educational tours, working with the artistic community to develop awareness through social art. We are stewards of the People's Park, and we are all volunteers who clean the park and promote cultural diversity. I have been a practitioner of the Yuto Nahua Mexica Aztec traditions for the majority of my life. I am a fourth-generation spiritualist. My grandmother was a traditional curandera of the Nahua indigenous people of Mexico. She was a spiritual healer whose presence was frequently requested for blessings and other healing activities. I was fortunate to be part of her healing artwork. Early in my childhood, I was her little helper and traveled to many ceremonial obligations, which included festivities for the Mexica Aztec celebrations. Our traditions are oral. They include stories of the ancient Native American people of Mexico. The healing arts also include songs, flower and herbal working, feather working, poetry, painting, and mural production. These are ancient teachings of the Toltecayot, which means to bring the pureness of our hearts into society in all that we do. These teachings help to keep a spiritual balance with our physical and material world. Through our efforts, we help to preserve the eloquent way of life that is our sacred traditions through blessings. Everything that we begin and end starts with permission. We acknowledge the four directions, the four elements of life. The cardinal directions include men, women, children, and elders. The prayer bowl, Popush Kemet, I carry contains copal, cedar sap to burn and cleanse. The smoke illuminates the four directions as I humbly ask for healing prayers of enlightenment, peace, and courage. It is an honor to share the intimate details of our way of life in this blessing. We are gathered here today to say thank you for all that you have done to promote the excellence of UC San Diego. Through your passion, you have helped transform visions into reality. The curiosity which has led many of you to research and explore ideas have developed into creativity and inspirational transformation. You are the embodiment of dedication, perseverance, and hard work. At some point, you have all inspired and motivated others to reach for exceptional and stellar performance. These relationships formed through your good work have created favorable change for a better life. Thank you and continue blessings in all that you do.
November 18, 1960. The University of California Regents officially established the UC San Diego campus, and Herbert York became founding chancellor the following year at the tender age of 39. It was an exciting time on campus. Some called it magical, with ideas flowing and everyone engaged in the planning of the future of the university. The first 150 graduate students enrolled. Notable faculty were being recruited from around the world. Departments were established in biology, philosophy, and literature. There was talk of creating a medical school. The vision of our founders, especially the father of our university, Scripps Institution of Oceanography Director Roger Revell, was becoming a reality. The former Camp Matthews military training ground was blossoming into a full-fledged university campus. John Galbraith, an academic, teacher, and administrator, was named UC San Diego's second chancellor in 1964. He has been described as one of the most ambitious of UC San Diego's early chancellors. He said his goal was to build the most exciting intellectual environment in the United States. During his tenure, UC San Diego enrolled its first undergraduates, began operating University Hospital, and acquired what is now Audrey Geisel University House. But Galbraith's main goal was to build a world-class library. He said, "A great humanities faculty needs a great library in the same way that scientists need great laboratories." Thus, the plans for the unusually designed library began. A concrete and glass structure with an inverted pyramid shape. When it opened a few years later, Geisel Library became an instant icon for the campus. It has been said that UC San Diego's third chancellor, William McGill, was a strong leader during a difficult time. He took office in 1968 after five others turned down the job. During his tenure, the School of Medicine enrolled its first students and our first undergraduates received their degrees. But it was a period of social unrest in our country, right after the shocking assassinations of Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert Kennedy, and during the Vietnam anti-war movement. Protests were a common occurrence on campuses nationwide, and UC San Diego was no exception. McGill worked to maintain peace and order while the campus continued to expand. He is remembered most for his conflict resolution skills. UC San Diego's ties to the community strengthened under the leadership and outreach of our fourth leader, William McElroy, who became chancellor in 1971. He created the Chancellor's Community Advisory Board, which still exists today, and oversaw the formation of the Alumni Association. He led the campus during a critical period of growth. Our student body doubled from 6,500 students to 11,400. Our faculty almost doubled as well, with more than 900 scholars on board. Dr. McElroy also enhanced the campus's research budget and encouraged expansion of the arts, humanities, and social sciences at UC San Diego, which had already become well-known for its scientific strengths. UC San Diego's longest-running chancellor, our fifth, led the campus from 1980 to 1996. Richard Atkinson was known as an academic entrepreneur. He encouraged technology transfer and active involvement with industry, especially with the small high-tech companies that were popping up around San Diego in the 1980s. Meanwhile, the campus was gaining more recognition, with many of our graduate programs ranking among the top 25 in the country. UC San Diego was elected to membership in the prestigious Association of American Universities, consisting of 62 of the nation's top research universities. The campus infrastructure boomed under Atkinson's watch. The Price Center, Faculty Club, Birch Aquarium, Shiley Eye Center, Thornton Hospital, and REMAC all opened their doors. The campus purchased University Hospital from the county and renamed it UC San Diego Medical Center. And the Stewart Collection was initiated with the installation of the Sun God. By the time our sixth chancellor, Robert Dines, was appointed in 1996, UC San Diego had more than 18,000 students, five undergraduate colleges, and a growing research enterprise. Sixth College was established. So were the Rady School of Management and the Skaggs School of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences. Dines had big ideas for the campus, launching a $1 billion fundraising campaign. UC San Diego was the first university in the region to set such a lofty goal. He also created the Chancellor's 5K Run and Walk to raise money for student scholarships. It has been said that Dines catapulted our young university onto the world stage. UC San Diego's seventh and first female chancellor, Marianne Fox, was appointed in 2004. Under Fox's leadership, UC San Diego initiated more than $3.5 billion in capital improvement projects and made student housing a priority. As our student body expanded at a record-setting pace to nearly 30,000 students. The new construction, including the Price Center expansion and the Village at Torrey Pines, increased the assignable square feet of space at the university by 40%. During Fox's tenure, UC San Diego surpassed $1 billion in research funding for the first time, and we successfully completed the billion-dollar capital campaign started by Dines. Our campus celebrated our 50th anniversary, instituting new traditions along the way, including our annual Founders Celebration. Fox also initiated the Volunteer 50 Challenge, encouraging every campus member to perform 50 hours of service during each academic year. It's no wonder UC San Diego has now been ranked the number one university in the nation for our commitment to service 5 years in a row. Our current leader and eighth chancellor, Pradeep Khosla, began his tenure in August 2012. Khosla initiated and led a comprehensive, all-inclusive strategic planning process to unify the campus and develop a shared vision for UC San Diego's future. The initiative resulted in our first ever strategic plan that sharpened our mission and vision as a student-centered, research-focused, service-oriented public university. COSLA is already taking action by expanding our faculty, upgrading classroom technology and undergraduate teaching laboratories, growing our graduate student and PhD programs, supporting multidisciplinary research projects, increasing investment in equity, diversity, and inclusion programs, and broadening college access for students from low-income families. The Chancellor's Associate Scholarship, created last year and expanded this year, provides local students from our partner high schools and community colleges with the opportunity to attend UC San Diego debt-free. We currently have 116 scholars on campus and plan to extend the program to 400 students. Now, with 54 years of extraordinary success, achievements, and contributions, we are defining the future of the public research university, igniting curiosity, sparking discoveries, providing opportunities, transforming lives. We are UC San Diego Tritons.
Wow, how joyful it is to watch the history of our great university unfold right before our eyes. Did you guys enjoy that? Yeah. And those of you who have made San Diego your home, or San Diego is home, you can't not imagine how the city would have been without the existence of our great university. And it's very touching to be part of this and to look out here and see our founding faculty, my own professor who I had in linguistics, Walter Monk, Dick Atiyah, all of them, and all of you here. So again, welcome to this special occasion. Franklin D. Roosevelt once said, "Keep your eyes on the stars and your feet on the ground." Richard C. Atkinson, Robert C. Dines, Mary Ann Fox, and Pradeep K. Khosla, all four of them have dedicated their life's work to daring imagination and absolutely deliberate leadership. Today, on this special occasion of our 50th anniversary, we wish to take you upon a journey. And as a conversation and the stories unfold, we hope to have you share through their eyes a conversation about what they imagined, what they thought, what they deliberated, and what they helped build. It is a true, true pleasure and privilege for me as a graduate of UC San Diego, a proud alumnus, to be part of this experience with all of you. I have a bit of bad news for you, though. Richard C. Atkinson, who was traveling abroad for the last 3 weeks, telephoned Chancellor Khosla, and we spoke with him this morning. He tried his very best, but he's under the weather, and unfortunately, he's not going to join us this morning. But as we all know Dick, he is everywhere, and I know he'll be watching this program once it's broadcasted. So please join me in wishing him our very best for a speedy recovery. So at this point, I'd like to ask, thank you, Walter. I think we'll join you with that. So please, at this time, help me welcome Mary Ann Fox, Robert C. Dines, and Pradeep Khosla to the stage. We talked a lot about who's going to sit where, so I'm glad it happened smoothly.
It wasn't that smooth.
But this is not like a debate.
It's not.
Or if it is, it's over.
Right. Have a nice day.
Yeah. As you're getting the sense, I'm going to have a really hard time moderating a conversation with the three of them, but I'm going to do my best. Chancellor Khosla, and we were back there talking, and I was observing your interaction with both Marianne and Bob. You're our eighth chancellor, and I think it's probably unheard of that a chancellor of a university or president of a university gets to lead this institution in the company of their three predecessors. What does that mean to you as our current chancellor to have their wisdom and their presence?
So actually, it means a lot. To put it in perspective, on this campus at any day, there are 50,000 people. That puts us in the top 10% of all cities and towns in this country. Right? It's a very complex operation. And the decisions we make have an impact 5, 7, 10 years down the line. So when I first got here, I had never been to San Diego, as in I've never lived here. I don't know anybody out here except for a couple of faculty members. To have like Dick Atkinson around, Bob Dines, and Marianne Fox was a way for me to be introduced to the community in a very seamless manner. And especially Marianne was extremely helpful. From the day I was announced to the day I got here, she was slowly vacating her office and telling me where everything should be going in a very nice way. And the decision she was making so that when I got here, nothing would be a surprise. And that was truly amazing. And then over time, Bob Dines and Dick Atkinson. So I can tell you, it's been a great honor. Now, I must also tell you, I've seen very bad transitions in other universities. If there was a perfect transition, I think I could write the story with my three predecessors as to what a perfect transition should be.
That's great. Chancellor Fox and Chancellor Dines, President Dines, one of those, whichever you answer to.
Bob.
I remember that. You are here all the time on our campus doing great work and supporting Chancellor Khosla on a daily basis. Can you share with us what keeps you engaged? What motivates you to be here? Maybe Marianne, you start.
I remember coming to San Diego as part of the interviewing process and having the opportunity to meet so many strong, strong faculty, people who are dedicated to scholarly achievement, and that this was passed on to students in such a way that they too were joining the scholarly community. And Bob was both my predecessor and my current boss at that time, which made things interesting, especially when we had interactions with the Office of the President in Oakland. I think one of the strengths that we have in the University of California is to recognize that these 10 institutions contribute uniquely in different ways, and that the scholarship, the intellectual momentum that's gained by having such an arrangement is unprecedented anywhere else in the world. So as you are graduates or faculty or staff of the university, we know that what is accomplished in concert, in a collaborative way, in new and inventive ways. And that's what makes it so incredibly strong for us to have the opportunity to serve as leaders for this great place.
I still have a lab on this campus. I brought it back from Berkeley. So I have students that bring me back every day. And it's incredibly exhilarating. I'm probably enjoying them more now than I ever have. In part because I have a sense of freedom that I never had before. And I have graduate students and undergraduates that are in my lab, and their inquisitiveness just motivates me. But the real reason for why I stay engaged with this university is, and you all know this, the job isn't done. It will never be done. Right? We must continue to prepare the next generation of young people for careers and for affecting the world. And that job we all have. So I come here every day and spend time with the next generation and the next generation.
So this question is for all three of you, but I'd like to ask Chancellor Khosla to start first. The theme for this year's Founders Celebration is curiosity, passion, and transformation. How have these qualities played a role and will continue to play a role on the evolution of this campus as a world-renowned university?
So I think these three words define what Roger Revelle was thinking when he was thinking about building a campus like this. I don't think even he could have predicted how great a campus or a university this was going to be in such a short time. And I think when I think about what the next 50 years are going to look like, these are the three defining words. They are defining words today for all of our students, faculty, and staff. They'd be defining words tomorrow and the day after for the next 50 years. I think these are the words that are going to define us. But what's really going to define us is not just these words, but our actions to support these words. And I think that's what that strategic planning process was all about. So,
I would say that as we think about the kinds of interactions that develop, the emphasis on interdisciplinary achievement, a new way of doing research than was done in the early 60s when so many of the faculty who are here today were active on this campus. I recognize that transformation is necessary. Transformation will only be accomplished if there's passion. And bringing these together, I think, is what this campus is all about.
The university's role is to allow curiosity, to allow people to ask questions that aren't asked in most other places. And the curiosity generates the passion, of course. So it's a natural flow. In answering questions, one becomes engrossed, passionate. And the passion results in transformation. And so it's a natural flow, which is the role of a research university, a good research university. And this isn't a good research university. This is a great research university.
And it's in our mission statement now. We will transform California and a diverse society, right? I mean,
yeah, so it's a commitment.
Right. It is a commitment we've all made.
So we all watched the video, and the history of this great university just illustrated how we have shaped this region and touched so many lives in San Diego. As we look ahead, what do you think is the role for UC San Diego in defining or redefining a public higher education system? Maybe we start with Marianne on this one.
Good.
She says.
The idea of going forward in terms of building new institutions, changing the way that we look at emerging opportunities, and doing this in a world context, a global future for what we could attain, I think presents a hallmark for any great university. It was not easy for this university to be admitted to AAU as quickly as it was. It's not easy for us to be ranked first in the nation by Washington Monthly for bringing together different parts and aspects of the university. But we did it, and we did it together. And we used the expertise and the dedication that evolves from any member of a faculty in a way which I think is absolutely unique. The assets that this university has and can draw toward the solution of any problem are, I think, almost unique, and we should be as proud as anyone in the world about those achievements.
Yeah. Bob and then.
Sure. A university is the lifeblood of new knowledge, of new ideas, of off-the-wall ideas, and of the people that carry those ideas. A university is the place where you can protest. It's true. It's absolutely true. I mean, it's a place where you can express yourself, and that affects, in some way, over some time, all of our society, because we're launching thousands of young people who have been, I hope, educated, and I hope impassioned by our environment, and that changes the world. So I don't know how the world can change for the better. I know how it can change, but not for the better without research universities injecting passionate people.
And Chancellor Cosa, this has really been the hallmark of your leadership, that defining the future of public higher education. So can you talk about...
Right. So I think if you look at the history of this country, I think the rise of the public university was the beginning of the rise of this country as a powerful economy and a powerful nation in the world. And one cannot forget that. I mean, it goes back more than 100 years. Today, public universities still have a very important role to play. But today, the role is a similar role. It's about access. It's about equal access, and it's about egalitarian access. So that's one of the things that I've focused on, because the costs of education are slightly out of sync with people's ability to pay. So that's part one of the story. Part two of the story is higher education itself, and what is it that we should be educating the next generation of students with? So in the past, we talked about a holistic education, the left brain, the right brain, the sciences with the arts and humanities. And I think we can keep the same model, except look at it slightly differently. So if you think about what is needed right now for this generation to solve the problems of the next generation, It is design thinking, which is open-ended, creative synthesis of ideas and that type of thinking. It is computational thinking because computers are pervading every aspect of our life. And I cannot imagine anybody not being technically literate, at least in terms of their operation and understanding how to use them. So computational thinking, which is algorithmic thinking. It is entrepreneurial thinking, which is both risk-taking and pragmatic simultaneously. And it is the type of thinking, it doesn't mean you have to start a company all the time, but it means you have to be a self-driven, self-propelling entity that's starting with new ideas and pushing the envelope. And last but not the least is problem-solving type of thinking. And I think we have assets. Our six colleges are amazing assets, at least in my mind, that gives us six possible routes for general education. And regardless of what we do, in terms of the majors, we can use our six colleges and their routes of general education to embed this type of thinking in the next generation. And I think that will put us at a layer above where we are in terms of higher education institutions.
Thank you. There's a lot of national conversation and debate about the future of research funding, as well as just the promise and affordability of education. I know all three of you have spent time in the Oval Office with various presidents. What advice would you give this president or the next president to really put this on the right course for all of us?
I would, Bob, you want to talk?
You've started. You're on your way.
I was going to say, I think the formula for success of this country was established between World War I, World War II, when the great American research university was created. And I think it would be a mistake to not take that existence proof, not acknowledge it, and start messing with it to do something else. I think investing in our research infrastructure, in our people, is the best thing we could do.
As Chancellor Koshler was speaking about this, I think of the portrait inside the National Academy of Sciences in Washington. It's Abraham Lincoln signing the charter that created the National Academy of Sciences and this aspiration for high achievement. It's interesting to recognize that it was right in the middle of the Civil War. It was a stage where the North depended significantly on having the capability of going forward. The Morrell Act in Congress created the land-grant institutions, which are inherent in the excellence of our institutions. And I think that one graphic for understanding how our institutions have grown is to think of this as a three-legged stool. Access is important. Our students must be able to have the best educations anywhere in the world. Affordability, keeping our tuitions as low as possible because the legislature needs to make its commitment, as well as the federal government. And the third one is excellence. We cannot move away from excellence as the primary goal of this university. And our willingness to come together to achieve exactly that is the reason we're all here today.
And Bob, what would be your advice?
The research universities in America are the envy of the world. They truly are. And they have been for a long time. Look around you. People are here from everywhere. Other countries, other institutions try to copy us. And the public research universities, by far and away, are the largest of the universities in America. So the public research universities are a national prize and must be open to the world. We must maintain the excellence. And when that happens, the rest of the world will want to come here. Some will go home, and that's a good thing. Some will stay here, and that's a good thing. And that's the way, in my opinion, America stays strong.
Can I add one more thing? I think lately, and we've all three of us have noticed this trend of both the congressmen and other senior leaders picking on arts, humanities, and social sciences. I think we need to stop that because I think the research in this area is very underappreciated, and what needs to be appreciated, not just the research in this area, but the role it plays in making us a better people and a better society and helping us understand each other. And I don't know how to say this, but this needs to stop because there's a lot of negative activity going on the Hill right now. So, no. Outside too.
So I think I have actually personally heard all of you say that you don't like surprises. But job of a chancellor, undoubtedly you're surprised. So can you reflect back and share with us in your tenure as chancellor and you're currently, what is one thing that surprised you the most? Bob, we'll start with you.
I was surprised I loved the job. That's really true. It's really true. It wasn't that it wasn't contentious. It wasn't that it wasn't difficult. It wasn't that it wasn't awkward at times. But I was surprised. I loved coming in every day, and I loved staying late, and I loved sitting down with faculty and staff and students and having the discussions and formulating my own opinions. It was surprising to me that I liked it so much.
Marianne, did you like the job?
I loved the job, too. I must say that that it's hard not to when you're in a place like UC San Diego. The very fact that this institution rose essentially fully armored from nothing in less than a half a year, a century, was surprising to me. Things are accomplished faster here and more completely and more intellectually relevant way than anywhere I've been, including institutions that are ranked higher than us in the rankings for world global preeminence.
So I was surprised by our accomplishments and the greatness we have achieved in spite of the bureaucracy that we have created. And I really was, actually. We have more bureaucracy than I would care for. But in spite of that, we are an amazing place, truly an amazing place. So I would take this any day over places with no bureaucracy and not as much greatness. But having said that, over the next few years, I want to imagine, what would it be like if we reduce the bureaucracy? I think we'd be propelling ourselves higher and faster, and that's where we want to be.
I think anyone likes bureaucracy, but we do so much to protect it. I never understand. It's in our nature. For Bob and Marianne, if you can talk about, if you can share with us the most defining moment of your tenure as chancellor, and then we'll ask you a different type of question.
Well, I think it has to do with ways in which we interact together. I was very flattered to be elected to receive the National Medal of Science, because it's unusual for... It's very unusual that an administrator would be even eligible for one of the national medals. And I think that the reason that we're competitive as administrators and the faculty can list these same sort of suggestions is because we work together so incredibly well.
I actually knew this question was coming, so I actually thought about it a little bit, and it turns out that there are a lot of them, but there are two that stand out, two moments. One was early in my tenure, and that was when Cecil Lytle and Bud Meehan came to me with an idea for a charter school. And some of you will remember there was a difficult period in transitioning that into reality, but it was transitioned with a lot of help from a lot of faculty, a lot of staff, a lot of the community. It became the Preuss School, which is an enormous success as a charter school for underserved kids. That was transformative to me because I realized that if you had enough passion and enough people, you could actually do anything. The second one was later in my tenure when we decided we needed to create a campaign. And we had all the experts and all the consultants, who didn't give us much, actually, who came in and sort of told us what we should be doing. And I realized that we were capable of raising $1 billion, and that there were so many friends of UCSD that we could do that. And I remember walking around the campus one day and looking at the buildings that were going up and the things that were being built and the schools that were being created and how I was running around the campus is actually the truth. And I thought, wow, there's nothing can stop us. And that was a realization that happened one morning. I remember it well. And that we were capable of raising $1 billion then. We're capable of more now.
And Chancellor Kosler, for you, I mean, you still have 15 more years, so.
That's exactly what I think. So I don't want to think ahead because that'd be presumptuous, but I can tell you that a defining moment to me, at least as of now, would be just maintaining and the momentum that my three predecessors together have created. I think it is not a small job to maintain that. It might look easy, but it really is not, because there's so much going on, and one needs to be constantly on the lookout and make sure that I'm not making choices and decisions that's going to dissipate this momentum. Secondly, I think if you were to ask me, like, 10 years out, if I could generate $500 million of undergraduate scholarship endowment where we could have 1,000 students here go for free, loan free every year, I think that would be an amazing transformational effect, not just for this institution, but for 1,000 young men and women and the country. So I think I would love to get to a point where we are able to admit and graduate everybody loan free.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Bobby, want to add?
Yes, I would like to add something, and that is that...
Is it to Pradeep's legacy or yours?
No.
Both.
No, it has to do with Dick Atkinson. I left Bell Laboratories in 1990, and there were several universities that I was debating in my own mind to go to. Several prestigious universities in the East Coast and the West Coast. And I came and visited here, and the chair of the department was Roger Dashen at the time, and he was a very compelling person. And he dragged me over to Dick Atkinson's office. And I sat with Dick. You never sit with Dick for very long, because Dick, as you know, doesn't have a long attention span, because his mind is going like this all the time. And I sat and talked with him for about 15 minutes, and I thought, wow, I'm coming here. This guy was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think most of us know the struggles that Roger Revelle went through to make the case and establish UC San Diego. Walter probably better than anyone else knows that. If Roger was here with you and you had a chance to take him somewhere on this campus and show him something and then tell him something, what would that be? They don't know this question, so this is just...
Yeah, I know. So I can tell you what I would do. I would take him to the Conrad Prebys Auditorium, and I would show him the three amazing auditoriums, the one especially with state-of-the-art digital controls where I can emulate or simulate any environment I want. And I would have some of our faculty perform for him, so that he can appreciate that this school, from its humble beginnings in science, has used that and become a powerhouse in music, for example, but again, enabled by technology, computer revolution, and that's what I would do.
You know, what I would do is take him to see undergraduate research, to see the students that come and interact strongly with our graduate students and with our faculty, really define this institution. And that's where I'd go.
I've heard the story many times that Roger would take people along Ridge Walk to recruit them to the campus. I'd take them to Ridge Walk, turn them around, look back in the campus. I wouldn't have to say anything.
Wonderful. Well, that brings us to the end of the questions we have. I just wonder if you'd like to take this chance to either ask each other something or some closing thoughts and reflections.
Actually, I was going to ask Marianne, if when I was interviewing, if I had called you and said, Marianne, what do I need to know about this place? What would you have told me?
That's a good question. Because he came in so well prepared, there was no need for me to tell him anything. The reality of having an engineer leading this campus, I think, is a really important comment on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, the STEM disciplines. And I think we have a really serious problem that's going to be coming forward in STEM education. We have to make an investment as a nation. We have to be willing to do difficult and hard things. And we have to learn a little bit about how to do that. I think you've done a fantastic job of trying to, through strategic planning, come up with a direction for this idea. But we've got to pull together as a nation if we were to succeed.
Pradeep, I'd like to both comment and ask you. When you announced the Chancellor's Associate Scholarships,
right,
for the Preuss School and for
Gompers,
and my first reaction was, damn, I wish I'd thought of that.
I know, you told me that. And, you know, that was the best compliment I could have gotten. You told me that.
I really wish I'd thought of that. So now I can ask you, because you're in the seat and not me, what's next? How do we crank that up even further?
Like I said, I think we need to create access, not just based on need, which is what the Chancellor's Associate Scholarship is, right? Make it more affordable.
Right.
But also based on, so this is need and capability, but also based just on capability, which would be the regents and the Chancellor's Scholars. I think we need to get to a point where just about everybody who needs the help vis-a-vis affordability of education, we as an institution, we as a community should be able to provide. And it doesn't mean that every one of us has to give millions and millions of dollars. I was telling Armin that if you think about 3 million people who live in this greater San Diego, and I don't know, about 500,000 or so households, if every one of us were to put in $100, we could send thousands of kids to UC San Diego every year. So I want us to be able to articulate that little bit from a lot helps everybody, and we don't have to just get a lot from a few people. And everybody should be involved with UC San Diego, because we are, I think, the engine of economic development in this place. So.
You can sign me up.
Thank you. And by the way, we've signed you up already. You are leading our you are leading our undergraduate scholarship council.
I am.
Right?
That's why I said it was a gratuitous statement.
And when we kind of announce a campaign in a year or so, you know, you will have a quota you'll have to deliver on.
Oh.
Just commenting on the same thing. Well, one of the reasons this question about affordability is so important, you've read a whole series in the New York Times this spring about contributions that are made, and in particular about middle class. We have to have a business model that provides financial support for our students from the middle class. If we've had students who are poor, we've been able to sometimes at least put together packages that are attractive. And at the other extreme, those whose families can afford it are less affected. But students like those who you've just heard so passionately comment are really difficult for us to find the resources. And again, another reason why what Pradeep said just a few minutes ago is so important.
One of the least understood aspects of the of tuition or fee increase, and I don't know why it's not understood, because it's said over and over and over again, and that is that families from incomes that are less than, it's probably $100,000.
$80,000.
Families with incomes of less than $80,000 will not see those increases. they will be covered by basically those of higher income. So they won't see them. They will not, those that say, I can't afford it, if they can't afford it, they won't get those increases. And I don't for the life of me understand why that's not better understood.
Actually, we don't talk about it. So, for example, on this campus, nearly half of our students from California pay no tuition.
No tuition.
And 55% in the UC system pay no tuition, right? But when, so that's an important thing to remember in the context of tuition increase. But what I'm talking about is, even if you pay no tuition, so think about this country where like 28% of the population, households in this country make less than $25,000 a year. 51% of households make less than $50,000 a year. So if you just take a simple university education where, let's say there's no tuition, zero tuition, just living on campus costs between $12,000 and $17,000 a year. If you make $50,000 a year with two or three kids, to extract $15,000 after taxes and pay for somebody's education is not that easy. $15,000 at 10 hours, $10 an hour is still 1,500 hours a year of work. That is 9 months of work. So it's not like our wage standards on the other end allow our students to go work part-time and pay their tuition. So I think things are way more complicated right now than they used to be. And I am actually a strong believer that we all have to pitch in to educate our kids, not just my kids, but our kids.
Thank you for that. I think that absolutely deserves. So, pretty. I believe you have a gift.
I do have a gift.
Yes.
And it is actually, let's see, how am I going to do this? Am I supposed to? Okay, there it is.
If he doesn't know, who does?
The chancellors are typically kept in the dark. It's the staff who know everything. Okay, so here's a gift. When I realized that four of us were still on this campus, we had this picture taken at last year's Founders Day, which is Chancellor number 5, 6, 7, 8. So they're in that order, and they complement the order in the faculty club. I don't know if you've known, seen 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in that order, right? So this is a gift for each one of you. So here's you, Marianne.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Pradeep.
And I don't have a gift for you.
That's okay.
But there's some.
I have a gift for myself. Same thing.
But there's some roses here on the stage. Am I supposed to give you all roses?
No, that was part of the prayer.
These are part of the blessing. They stay here.
Okay. And but Pradeep, I think it's evident, and had Dick been here with us today, that I think the gift that you have is the wisdom and the friendship of not just our chancellors, but this entire community as you forge forward.
Thank you.
So I hope you've all enjoyed this conversation, and really as much as I have. And for those, your friends and your families that were not able to join us, UCTV has graciously taped this, and it will be broadcasted. And I'm certain it's going to be viewed by thousands and thousands. So thank you again for joining us today on this very special day with very special people, an incredible audience, and our founding faculty. Thank you for being with us today. And happy Founders Day and happy UC San Diego birthday. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.